My name is Mason Schultz. I'm interviewing veteran Ross Holcomb, born January 30th, 1987. He served in the Global War on Terror in the United States Marines, highest rank of E4 Corporal. The interview is being conducted in Missoula, Montana on November 1st, 2013. The interview is being conducted for the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress.
My name is Ross Holcomb. I served with 2nd Battalion, 3rd Marines out of Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii. Did one deployment to Iraq, one deployment to Afghanistan. I got out of the military as a corporal in 2011.
All right, so where were you born?
I was born in Kalispell, Montana.
Talk a little bit about your family, the name of your mother and father, and any siblings you have.
My mother's name is Helen Bushby. I have a father named Ron Holcomb. My brother and sister's name is Cody Nace and Kyle Nace.
What were you doing before you entered the Marines?
I took a year off after high school and just worked construction around Flathead Valley.
Does your family have any history with the United States military?
No.
When did you first ever think of enlisting in the military?
It kind of been a lifelong thing, I guess. I always kind of thought about it, thought it was going to happen. But after taking that 1 year off after high school, I just kind of decided it was time to start it.
Did anything in particular make you move to make that decision?
Just that I really kind of saw that I wasn't going anywhere special, sitting in Big Fork, doing nothing, really. Didn't want to work construction for the rest of my life, and kind of thought that it's time to make that change.
So how old were you when you enlisted?
I was 19.
Why did you choose the Marines?
Well, that's a weird question. I joined the Marine Corps because I was always told that that was the best, the baddest and best group out there. And just kind of wanted to prove something to myself that I could do it. So that's why I went with them.
Was there anything else you were trying to prove to yourself when choosing the Marines, or?
Not really, no.
So what was it like when you first, stepped foot on base, or?
The very first time we actually set foot on base, I was down at camp, Marine Corps Recruiting Depot in San Diego. They loaded us up on buses, and they picked us all up from the airport. And it was exactly that, set your feet on the yellow footprints, and then it was game on from there. It was a pretty intense feeling, something I definitely wasn't prepared for. But they turned it up pretty quick and got us ready for it. So.
How did you handle it?
I handled it pretty well. We had a bunch of kids in our platoon throughout boot camp and everything like that that were, I'd say, a little more timid. I'd always kind of had like a strong head, I guess I'd say, and been able to deal with quite a bit. So it was a fairly easy transition for me.
So would you almost say that your personality was cut out for the Marines?
I'd say so, yeah.
So where did you go after basic training?
After basic training, they sent us to the School of Infantry on Camp Pendleton in California. I was there for about a month, just learning the basic tools of every infantryman needs to know. And then from there, my main duty station was in Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii. It was where I met my unit, 2-3 Fox. And we had, let's see, what else do you want there?
Trying
to think, yeah. On the spot.
Yeah. Did you receive any specialized training?
No real specialized training, I guess, other than the School of Infantry. At this point, I hadn't gone through anything else. I have done some brief martial arts training with the Marine Corps Martial Arts Program, and also went to a coach's course for the rifle range.
Looking back on it, how do you think your mindset was back then?
My mindset back then definitely has changed. I was in a little moto attitude, I guess, wanting to get over there and get in the fight and actually do something, whereas now I kind of look at it in another way as opposed to wanting to be in the fight. Now I'm more look at it glad that I was able to help out some of those people.
Did the military style life suit you, and if so, how?
The military life was good. It suited me well with getting used to all the people around there. I was real good at that, good at talking to people and meeting the groups of guys that I ended up going on deployments with. The barracks life was a little bit difficult. I guess it'd be a lot like people say it's like the dorm life, that was a little bit more difficult for me, just because, I'm trying to think, like having roommates, I guess, was tough. But military life as a whole, it's definitely a different step. With your families, a lot of your family's really taken care of when you're downrange on deployments and stuff. So that was nice to be sure that they were going to be taken care of while I was gone, and then if I passed, that they'd be taken care of also. So, trying to think what else I can say about that. I think that's it. answer that.
Did having someone tell you what your every move was that an easy thing for you to handle, or did that?
It was difficult at first. I wouldn't say I had a problem with authority figures or anything like that, but it was just difficult. Like I said, every move you did, you were pretty much told where to be, what to do at what time, and I was never really one for that, but you get used to it pretty fast.
Was there ever a certain instance where you really struggled with that?
Right away in boot camp, yeah, I really struggled with that, having, somebody kind of get right up in your face and yelling at you and telling you to do things a certain way was definitely was difficult for me. But once again, yeah, he learned to cope with it pretty quick.
How did you first handle it, and how did you learn to handle it?
Well, if you didn't do what you're told right off the bat, you spent some time on the ground pushing. So, there's that whole smarter, harder thing. You learn to deal with it, or otherwise you're going to be doing more work than you need to. So
when did you learn that you were going to be first deployed, and where was that to?
When I first learned that we were getting deployed to Iraq for my first pump, I'd been in the fleet for about a month. And then we kind of got our orders, and they figured it out where we were going. And that was an eye-opener, I guess, because then it really, clicked that this is really happening,
So you were a month into the service, and you were going?
Yeah, a month into meeting my guys with the fleet, and then we had, 7 months of training or something before we ended up deploying. So we had some time to gear up and get ready.
Did you feel any certain different way in your months leading up to your deployment once you had known?
Well, yeah, like I said, it kind of hit home. It was a real eye-opener. It made you start thinking about a lot of things. Of course, you get nervous. You don't really know what to expect, especially being, your first deployment. So I was definitely nervous, a little scared, I'd have to say. But once again, you know, you train with these guys, you know what everybody's capable of and that everybody can do their job. And that's a very comforting feeling too.
How old were you?
By that time I was probably late 19-year-old.
Do you remember the last day on base before deployment, and what was that like?
The last day on base. I remember a lot of families and, like, emotion and stuff like that. For me, I just got back from leave. We all took a month of leave about a week prior to deployment, so everybody went home, got to see their families and such. But other than that, it was just, you know, the guys getting together, hanging out and BSing and just relaxing, you know. But there was definitely some hard feelings for some guys leaving, you know, seeing them, watching them lead their kids and stuff. Was kind of a hard, so we put it, hard sight to see, I guess.
What was leave like for you the month before?
Pretty much a party the whole time, you know. Like, I came back, saw a bunch of my friends that I hadn't seen in, you know, almost a year, I guess, by this point. So got to see all those guys again, you know, and of course see all the family and stuff, and you know, mom's crying and shit like that. So, but it was pretty good.
So what was the, if you could basically explain to me the day of your deployment, kind of a step-by-step through that whole day.
Okay. It's actually a really long process to get into where you're actually going to be stationed for your deployment. So the first day we load up on the planes and stuff, and you know, we stopped in, I think it was Germany, and then one other place, and then we finally took off for Iraq. So there was probably, you know, a couple weeks worth of transition time. But I remember the first night at OP Omar was the FOB, or our forward operations base where we were stationed. I remember the first night stepping on deck there was completely disorienting because we got in there, you know, probably 1 a.m. or something, so it was pitch black out there. And, you know, you got everybody scrambling around trying to find their gear. All this happened, trying to take in the fact that you're actually in a combat zone. A lot going through your mind at that point.
What was it like when you first touched down in Iraq?
Well, it was, once again, like a huge eye-opener. You know, all this was just a big punch in the gut, I guess, you know. You get all pumped up to do this certain thing, and then you get there and then you actually realize that you're there. It's a real sobering experience.
What did anyone or anything help you with the transition?
I was fortunate enough to have like a really good team leader who had been on a deployment before that, and he was always kind of there to talk me through stuff. If I was, you know, nervous about something, he was right there to help me through it, so.
What missions, or what was your unit's purpose in Iraq?
The actual mission code was to deny enemy freedom of movement in our AO. And so basically what we'd do was we'd get sent out on patrols, do cache sweeps, pretty much just walk around until you find something that you need to check out or you take contact, you know. That was pretty much what we did for 7 months.
What were the areas like that you were walking around looking for these caches?
In Iraq, it was more of an urban environment, I guess, so there's a lot more buildings. There was quite a few farm fields also. And that's mainly where we find these caches, is buried out in these farm fields and along waterways and in culverts and stuff like that. Walking through the urban places was a lot like just walking around town, you know, downtown Missoula. You think about it, you know, just walking, you got buildings on all sides. And of course, like the culture is a little bit different. Think of another way to put it.
I don't know, man. Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I got, I guess.
Yeah. What was it like when you found something?
Well, when we found a cache, we'd pretty much just be walking around with metal detectors, and we'd get a hit on something. We'd set up a little, 360 around the area. A couple guys would start digging around and messing around with it. If we found something, a lot of times we'd have to call in EOD, the Explosive Ordnance Disposal teams, just to come check it out and make sure that there wasn't bombs rigged up and stuff like that. So once that all happened, if it was a cache, we'd continue to dig out all the stuff and get it all documented. And then majority of the time people are sitting in that 360 security, so you really don't know what's happening on the inside. But once we'd find those things, like I said, we'd get them all together, take a count of what we found, and then plant C4 on it and blow all the stuff up.
What exactly is a cache?
A cache, like ones we found, could be anything from firearms to, they had, it's a homemade explosive that they were making over there. So we'd find a lot of that stuff in, 5-gallon buckets and water jugs and stuff like that that they were just storing, waiting to use. But we found a lot of firearms. We found some mortar tubes, mortar rounds, RPGs. Just basic stuff that they're using to fight us over there.
So what was it like when you blew it up?
It's pretty exciting, actually, getting to see that stuff go up. It was kind of like a big 4th of July show, every time you got to do it. So, it felt good, too, that we were getting that stuff out there, knowing that they weren't going to be able to use that against us anymore. Just knew it was a huge hit to them, so felt good.
How big of a setback would you think that would be?
Well, the one my squad found, I can't remember how many, it was a few hundred pounds of HME, that homemade explosive, over 100 RPGs, 3 AKs, and the one mortar tube and all the rounds, I would say is a huge hit, because, they just can't get that stuff freely everywhere, so I'd say that set them back quite a bit.
How did it feel the first time you found one?
The first time we found one was a pretty small one, but it was still pretty exciting. We found a couple 155 rounds. They're artillery rounds. But there was only a couple of them, but it was a very exciting thing to do. Like I said, knowing that you're taking that stuff away from them, it just feels like small victories, So,
was the operation pretty smooth, or were there ever any unexpected things happening?
Yeah, there's always unexpected things happening. Everybody says you got to plan until the shit starts kicking off, and then plans just go kind of right out the window. There's always unexpected things happening. You never know you're gonna hit an ID. And I mean that it happens just that fast. So I mean, all you can do is be prepared for it.
Did anybody hit any explosives while you guys were searching?
I actually drove over one. One night we were doing a routine supply drop to another base we were staying at, and we were pulling out of our FOB, and just as I pulled out of the driveway, I guess, I can't remember what the hell the name is for it, but just rolled right over one. Luckily, nobody was hurt in that one. So we were able to get the truck pulled out with a wrecker, and then got it and kind of limped it back into the FOB, and that was it for the night.
So what was it? What was it like?
Confusion at first. You don't really know what happened. For a second, you're just kind of disoriented. I remember, first thing I remember doing, though, is looking back at my Gunner, because as soon as we got hit, like, I felt him kind of drop, you know. I looked back at him and was able to grab him and kind of get him back to, you know, get his wits about him again. Yeah, it was just super disorienting. Makes you nervous. You don't know what's going to happen next, you know. Should I pull forward? Should I stay here? You know, like, what should I try and do? And that one, we were lucky. We were in an MRAP because the explosive was a shape charge and hit the specialized V-shape hole of this MRAP and was able to deflect it away from me. If not, it would have came right up through the floor and into me. So, once again, sobering experience, you know, very humbling.
What was the rest of that night like?
I spent about 2 hours sitting at the medical tent, just getting checked out, you know, making sure everything was all right, nothing internal messed up. But I remember trying to go to sleep and just not being able to, you know. It's after something like that, your adrenaline's just kicked on for, you know, however long it takes. Yeah, it was very hard to sleep that night. The next day was tough, too. We had to go back out on another patrol, and I just remember, you know, I was driving again. So I was just kind of, you know, I was super nervous. Everything that was out there made me kind of have a double take, you know, looking for everything. But
were there
Everything went pretty smoothly for your unit that trip to Iraq, though?
Yeah, everything in that deployment went fairly smooth for us. So we had one issue where our company commander and battalion commander were killed by a suicide bomber. I guess I can't really say it went extra smooth, you know. Other than that, that was pretty much the biggest thing that happened in our deployment to Iraq.
Were you there when the bomb went off? No.
No, I wasn't.
Did you ever come across any combatants?
Yeah, we did. We took some small arms fire a few times on that deployment, probably, you know, a handful, 4 or 5 little firefights. But majority of the time, they'd take a couple pop shots at you and then take off, you know, so it wouldn't really be much return fire or anything like that.
Is that your first time being shot at?
Yes.
What was that like?
Very exciting, actually. Scary, but exciting. Because there's that, once again, that whole, you know, kind of confusion that first kicks in, trying to find out where it came from, where you should go to be best covered and stuff like that. But once again, that training that we did, you know, just kind of kicks in and your body just kind of reacts to it, you know. And so you just don't think too much about it and you just act.
So when you get deployed, do you already know an expected date of returning home or no?
Roughly, they say, you know, our deployments in the Marine Corps are roughly about 7 months. So we have a general date. We don't have specific dates. You know, we're not given the exact date. We're going to be boots back on deck and, like, back home, you know. No.
Do you keep track of the time?
Oh, yeah. A lot, you know. It's pretty much all you got, you know, countdown days. So it's like a kid before Christmas, you know.
Do you think a lot about back home when you're over there, if you have a little
tons,
bit of downtime?
Tons. It's always going through your mind, you know, wondering, you know, at the time, wondering what my girlfriend was doing, what are my parents doing, you know. You get to talk to them every now and then, you know, hear from your buddies having a party the night before or something like that while you're sitting over here, you know, rolling in dirt and mud and, you know, just getting grimy. But you definitely get homesick for sure.
What communication home was available to you?
We were very, very lucky when I was in Iraq. We had, you know, full internet access and a phone we could use, so we could call home, you know, pretty much whenever we wanted if we had the time. And so we were very fortunate in Iraq for that.
who did you stay in contact with the most?
It was probably my girlfriend at the time. I talked to her quite a bit. Yeah, she was a huge supporter of me. You know, talked to my dad, of course, quite a bit too. He was never really supportive about me joining the Marine Corps, but was very proud that I did and was always there to back me up if I was having some trouble.
What was it like trying to communicate with these people who, you know, you love them, but they have no idea what you did that day, what you're going through?
Well, for the most part, like, I'd try to separate that completely, you know. Like, I wouldn't tell them about what I was doing or what happened, you know. Just for the simple reason that, like, I didn't want them to worry any more than they already are, you know. So we'd talk about other things, and that was good for me too, you know, get my mind off of the stuff that had been happening. So get a little peace at home. So.
Is there anything that is, you know, kind of silly, but once you were over there, you realize how much you missed it?
Oh, yeah, all sorts of stuff, like hot water. You know, a real toilet, you know, all those things. Just those simple things, you know, a good bed. You know, I slept on the ground a lot of the times around cots. So, yeah, you miss a lot.
What were your guys' sleeping quarters like?
In Iraq, we had, we stayed in, you know, we had two platoons in one big room. We were pretty fortunate when we were back at the main FOB. We had, you know, they were a little twin size kind of fold out mattress thing, bunk style, that we'd sleep on. But then you're packed in a room with 30 other guys, you know, so there's not really much for personal space. But
did you ever get a good night's sleep?
I never say I got a full night's sleep when I was over there, you know. It was, you're always constantly doing something, you know, whether it be, we'd do like a week of patrols, a week of post and QRF. So, I mean, when you're on post, you're on your post rotation, you go up and you sit in a box for a couple hours and just watch around, seeing what's happening outside the FOB. Then you get, you know, 6 hours of downtime where you generally, that'd be your sleeping section for the day. And then you'd wake up and have another few hours of QRF, which is quick reaction force for any of those boys who are out on patrol. If they were to get into contact, they'd call the QRF, and then we'd go help them out. So, I mean, you never really got full night's sleep.
What was on your mind that night?
Well, once again, just back home, you know. Well, I mean, you're constantly thinking about back home. You know, wondering what everybody's doing, how everybody else is, how they're feeling, what's going on back home, you know, current events stuff. You think about it quite a bit, too. And I remember when we got back, there'd been songs on the radio, you know, that I'd never heard, that people say that's an old song, you know. Like, it's like, shit, man, I've never even heard that song. So.
So what was it like the day you guys got to come back?
That was a great day. I had a lot of family came over to Hawaii that were there before I got back. And pretty much you're on this long flight. You know, I can't remember exactly how long the plane rides took from each section. But I remember the pilot coming across saying, all right, we're getting ready to land back on the Marine Corps base. And you're sitting there and I don't think he really did it on purpose, but we went in for our initial, you know, touchdown, like to end the flight, and we ended up having to pull back up and circle around a couple more times, you know. So it was kind of a mind fuck, but we ended up sitting down, and you get off, come walking off the plane, and there's, you know, you're just in a single file line, and you see all the families and stuff sitting back there in the hangars waiting for everybody. And you're just kind of walking through the crowd waiting to bump into somebody, you know, and then seeing some of those faces again, like, it was extremely, like, hard, I guess. It was hard, you know, doing that. Good way, but, like, also difficult, you know.
What kind of plane were you guys in? Was it like a military style plane or?
Not then. When we take off from like Kuwait and into Iraq and stuff like that, it was more of like a military style plane. But for the most part, it was like just your average everyday, you know, civilian type plane.
And what was the first thing you wanted to do when you landed?
Get a beer. Yeah, wanted a beer.
So what did you, how long was it that you were down in Hawaii before it was back to being deployed?
I had 7 months back. So, and that's, you know, you're back doing all your training again. You're training up your guys, getting your younger Marines ready for the next deployment. So,
were you, do you think you were different after that first trip?
Yeah, I think you change, you know. It takes a little while to readjust. Like I said, my first deployment wasn't that active, so didn't have a whole lot, you know, going on in my mind, you know, but still, like, you're going from, you know, being on guard all day to, you know, okay, well, I'm sitting at home, you know, with my friends now and just family, and I'm safe here, you know. It takes a while to get back into that.
Do you have to convince yourself you're safe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Do you still have to?
Yeah, from time to time. Like, when I first got back from Afghanistan, it was super difficult. Now, I've been out for probably 3 years now, and I'm feeling pretty comfortable. I can walk into most any place and be all right.
So what was it like your second time?
My second deployment was quite a bit more active. We were deployed into Gulistan in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. Very, very mountainous terrain. There was the first real patrol we had. We were down on Route 515. This is before we got to Gulistan. And Route 515 was just littered with IEDs. We had a couple guys get hit right away. And we were on a patrol for security for the BC and his unit, where I hit another IED. And then our QRF team hit an IED coming out to pick us up. So that one was pretty active down south there. And then we moved up to Gulistan, where I said it, like, it was very mountainous, like more mud huts as opposed to like urban, like Iraq was, a lot of little farm communities and stuff. Like I said, a lot more contact in Afghanistan.
What was it like searching for the IEDs?
It's very nerve wracking, you know. The way it would work, I was our point man. And first team leader in Afghanistan, and the way it would work is we'd have we had engineers attached to us, so we had this kid Wagner that he'd walk pretty much right beside me or a little ways out ahead of me and just sweep for these IEDs, you know. And then every time I'd hear that thing beep, you know, like I'd get a little skittish, you know. I can imagine how he felt, but that's very, you know, you're watching every single step you're taking, you know, so it's a hard thing.
Was anybody ever hurt?
The guys that came out to get my Vic, after I hit that one IED, one kid lost a leg. A friend of mine was trying to pull him out while the truck was on fire, and some of the ammo in the truck exploded. He caught some shrapnel. Another one of my friends was launched out of that same truck, out of the turret. And then we had another one that was pretty bad.
Was that your worst day?
Well, you know, after finding out like what it was and knowing that they kind of, you know, they were coming out to get us, I definitely feel a little guilt for that. And yeah, I'd say that was probably my worst day.
How did you did it? How difficult was it moving on from that day going forward, or was it a little easier because you had to?
Well, I mean, you kind of have to. You kind of got to get over it and keep trucking. You know, you can't just, you know, sit back, and you're not allowed to sit there and not do anything. You know, you kind of got to keep coping with it and just deal with it, and not let the fear overtake you, really. Yeah. So it's definitely difficult to deal with, but you just got to.
What was that your first real interaction with injuries in combat?
Yeah, that was the first time that we ever had to deal with something like that, and it was definitely tough for me. You know, and I mean, it was tough for me, tough for everybody. So nobody's used to seeing that type of stuff, you know. But like I said, you kind of got to deal with it, you know.
So after that, what did you guys, what was your mission in Afghanistan?
Same thing as it was, you know, deny the enemy the freedom of movement type thing. So we'd go out on patrols, spend a week out on foot patrols. We'd go pretty much take over somebody's hut for a night and, you know, camp out, which was also kind of a freaky feeling. You know, we'd have a couple guys awake at all times, you know, doing posts and security and stuff. But once again, you know, like, you never really sleep, you know. You doze off for a little bit and wake back up, you know, check out what's going on. But I remember one week, we did a big push through some towns in Gulistan, just clearing them, checking for caches and stuff. And remember, we finished clearing up our section. We were going up to help out another group, and they started taking contact from the mountains. Same spot we always got hit from. We knew we were going to get hit from there. They started taking contact there, so we kind of started booking it over there pretty fast. And we had artillery stationed up at our base. So they started dropping artillery rounds on the mountainside. So that was kind of a wild experience. I can still see it perfectly, you know, walking through this field and seeing these artillery rounds blowing up on the mountainside. So it was pretty rowdy, actually.
What did it look like?
Well, you'd hear, just walking through this field, you know, you'd hear the boom, and then all of a sudden you'd see a poof on the hill, and then a couple seconds later you'd hear another boom, you know. So it's like you could hear them when they'd let them loose, and like just see that flash and that dust cloud, and then hear another, you know, sound. So it was pretty wild.
When you say that you would take over some guy's hut and chill for the night, what do you mean?
Well, we'd go into, you know, normally we'd try to pick an abandoned house, but that, you know, you weren't always able to find one. So we'd move into his house just for the night. You know, he'd go stay with somebody else. And most of the time they were very willing to do that. You know, not like we'd just bust down their door and tell them to get the hell out, you know. We'd go in there and talk to him with terps and stuff, and yeah, they'd pretty much pack up their things, and we'd clear out the house and like make sure there's nothing in there, and then just, like I said, camp out, you know.
Did you ever have resistance
for staying in a house?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a couple times, like, you know, nobody wants to like leave their house, you know, but they, you know, sadly, like, they really didn't have the choice in the matter, you know. So nobody ever tried to like get physical with us or anything, but of course they'd be pissed off and cursing at us and such. But no serious contact.
Did you take more contact in Afghanistan than Iraq?
Yeah, it took a lot more. Like, I can't even count how many firefights we were in Afghanistan. I remember one specifically, though, that lasted for about a half hour. And that doesn't sound long, but it's a long time. So, we constantly were calling in, air support and, getting more people out there. And so we had, a lot more to do in Afghanistan, I'd say.
What was that like? Like that specific one, how was that?
I remember what had happened. We were pushing down in the pass to secure a route for a log train or logistics train to come bring food and stuff up to our FOB. So we were pushing down there to give them security. And one of the Afghani police vehicles that was attached to us hit an IED, which started the firefight. And they had, probably five or six guys in the bed of this truck and four guys in the cab. And majority of them died. We had to get a couple guys on birds and get them back for some help. But then that firefight just kind of kicked off, and we set up a mortar tube just to drop loom rounds and stuff because we didn't have any direct, line of sight and couldn't tell, if those mortar rounds were going to hit civilians or not, so we couldn't really use them. The actual firefight part was pretty nuts. I remember my gunner, LaValle, sitting on a 40 mic, machine gun, just launching these rounds out, and it was a wild sight. And then, of course, I had, dusting my saw gunner, just letting loose pretty much, telling him where to shoot, where I'm seeing people, So.
Was anybody hit?
None of our guys got hit, no. And so we weren't able to do a BDA, which is a battle damage assessment, till the next morning. So by that time, everything had been kind of cleaned up, we did find some spots where it looked like some of their guys had been hit, and but they obviously picked them up and moved them out, So, yeah.
Did you ever fire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did quite a bit, but mainly as a team leader, I feel my job was more to direct the fires of my team, my truck, and stuff like that, like you'll fire, when you see some, but like I said, mainly like I'd talk my saw gunners on target and stuff like that. So
what was that like, firing?
I really don't think about it anymore. When you're doing it, you're taking contact, you're getting shot at, I'm gonna fucking shoot back. I remember that same night, me and Dusty, when I'm talking to him on target, there's a brief lull in fire, and then all of a sudden, I started hearing these snaps, come right over us. We started shooting back pretty heavy, because as soon as we'd stop, they'd start shooting again, So.
What was the mountainous terrain, like how was it? Was it hot? Was it dry?
It was very dry. You'd be walking through this desert, rocky-looking mountain, and all of a sudden come up over a hill, and there'd be, a village where there's farm fields and stuff, So, the terrain was pretty intense. So mountains just shoot up out of nowhere, straight up, So.
So how far into your service were you during the second deployment?
I think I had about, after my second deployment was up, I probably had about a year left in the military.
How long did you plan on staying in the military?
Originally, like every little motivated young Marine, you know, you're thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to make this a career. This is going to be my life, you know. But comes a point, like, where your family starts being more important, you know, being around, you know, I had a daughter. So being around her was more important to me than going back and deploying. So kind of wanted to get out and just and be a real person again.
At what point in your service was she born?
She was actually born 6 shortly after I got back from Afghanistan, she was born. And so
so when did you decide that you were going to get out after 4 years?
Say that day I had my daughter. You know, my wife and I had talked about, you know, staying in and, you know, just because the benefits of the medical benefits that the military gives you would have been great for us and our kid. But I just kind of, like, I decided, you know, I'm going to deploy if I stay in, and I don't want to take that chance. So.
What's it like now, thinking back to that time?
Like, just the time in the military?
Just that decision and...
I mean... Let's see. I think I made the right choice, you know, getting out. Get to see my daughter grow up and stuff, you know. And like I said, I think about it a lot. Like, I could, you know, if it wasn't for her, I'd probably still be in. But, definitely don't regret making that decision and getting out, though.
What did you fear if you were to stay in, or maybe not, maybe fear is not the right word, but...
I was always worried that, you know, if I did get deployed and something did happen, that my daughter would grow up without knowing me. And I didn't want that one bit.
So now that you're... What did you do... what's your life been like since leaving the military? What's the first thing that you did, kind of?
Like, how my life's changed?
Or just, like, after, did you stay in Hawaii? Did you move back? What were your plans?
Well, after, you know, my EAS day, the day I got out, we pretty much, you know, got on a plane and flew back, back to Montana. And I didn't really know what I was going to be doing at first. Didn't have a job or anything like that. And that was definitely, you know, a scary feeling, having this new family and moving somewhere where you might not be able to get a job. But I felt like it was the right choice, you know. We moved back here. And then shortly after, I did get a job working at a distillery, actually, in Big Fork. So I did that for, you know, 2 years, and then I quit doing that and started working landscaping, you know, so pretty much just getting back to the life I left before the military.
How do you feel about your service in the military now?
It's good. I'd go back and do it all over again if I had to. I don't regret any choice I've ever made. So yeah, I'd definitely go back. It was a good experience, made me grow up a lot. Taught me a lot of things, and really made me learn who I am. So,
do you ever have, what was it like coming back and reconnecting with friends?
It was hard at first, you know, because you can't really, you know, talk to them about everything you did, and, you know, of course you're not the same person anymore. You know, so it was hard reconnecting with everybody. It took a little bit of time. But just like every big change in life, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time before you settle back down.
So at what point did you decide to come to school?
Well, once again, like I got kind of stuck in a rut, I think. Realized I needed to make a change if I was ever going to do anything other than, you know, manual labor. So it was just kind of, you know, made up my mind that, you know, I got these benefits from the military. I might as well take advantage of them and actually get somewhere and do something. So,
how were you as a student before the military, and how different are you now?
Well, in high school, I was definitely, you know, didn't really care too much about the grades and all that stuff. Now, you know, I'm actually doing something I want to do. I'm not just being forced to do work. The military definitely taught me some things about, you know, picking a goal and sticking with it, you know. And I definitely feel like if I would have went to college right out of high school instead of going to the military, I probably would have just ended up dropping out and never going back, you know. But here, this is kind of, you know, I set my mind to this, and I'm actually, you know, concentrating on studies and doing a lot better and stuff.
Do you have any, like, residual effects from your service? No, just anything that you still have to work with?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, dealing with big crowds of people still kind of affects me. Like I said, I mean, I can walk into most places and be okay. But being just surrounded by people, I get kind of claustrophobic, I guess. I just don't like that feeling.
What's it like sitting in classes with kids fresh out of high school who their world experience is the kind of the, I don't know how to put it, the American dream type?
Mm-hmm. It's different, you know. Let's see, what was I going to say? I had something picked out. No, it's good, man. You know, the same, you know, I just look at it the same way I would have been, you know, when I got out of high school, if I would have went straight to college. So, I mean, you can't really blame a kid for being a kid, you know. They're just kind of going to do what they do, and then you just got to keep doing what you're doing. So,
what's it like for you walking into a classroom?
Like I said, that it was kind of hard for me in some of those bigger lecture halls. You know, I got a class in Yuri. That was difficult for me. But I'm like, once again, it's something I'm doing most every day, so you get used to it pretty quick. And just find a spot where you're comfortable and just stick there. So,
what makes you comfortable?
Well, now that I've had I have a few friends down here, sitting next to people I know, kind of helps out, you know. I got a lot of friends from the vet house that I talk to that have helped me out quite a bit.
So we were talking about a particular guy, and he was saying that when he walks into a classroom, he'll identify exits and things of that nature. Does any of that go through your mind?
Not so much anymore. I mean, it would have when I was first back, you know, from deployment and stuff. Like, I'd walk into, you know, a restaurant and, you know, wanting to have my back to the wall or something all the time, looking for the exits, the ways out. But not so much anymore, you know. Like I said, I feel like I've adjusted pretty well.
So have you had any special, like, reception from community or anything like that?
Well, like I said, the vet house, the guys here on campus have been great, you know. We always get together before the games and do that tailgate they got out there, hang out, have some hot dogs and stuff like that. We had a ceremony for over here. The monument or memorial just got dedicated here on campus. There was a ceremony for it last Saturday, I believe. Excuse me. But other than that, nothing really big.
How do you... So, yeah, we'll go to that, the interaction with that kid.
Okay. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Oh, fuck, I'm trying to think how to explain it. All right, so one day on a patrol, I noticed a little boy didn't have any shoes. His feet were kind of beat up. So later that day, I walked by one of the shops in the town, bought a pair of flip-flops, and went back to the hooch and ended up making him a pair of shoes out of duct tape. And ever since that day, that kid, he kind of looked at us a lot different, and it was kind of a neat feeling to know that we'd helped that person, or I helped that person, rather, and kind of saw a different light in the community when that happened. We also did a lot of, when we were in Afghanistan, we put in some wells and stuff in certain towns, so they had some better drinking water. So there was a lot of really neat things we did with the community, and a lot of them were really open to us, as opposed to, you know, everybody thinking that it's super one-sided fight. You know, there are some really good people over there.
How did you make the shoes? Describe the process of
the shoes. Well, they weren't fancy by any means, but so I took that form of the flip-flop, you know, and just kind of started wrapping duct tape around, so they started looking like tennis shoes. I mean, it was, like I said, it wasn't anything super fancy, but the kid definitely appreciated it. They probably didn't fit him all too well, but, you know, better than nothing, I guess.
Oh, what was his, like, reaction, like his facial expression? And
well, just a huge smile, you know, every day. Since then, like I said, he'd come up to me and want to shake my hand and stuff like that, and he was just super happy. You know, a little bit goes a long way over there. It's kind of interesting to see that in different cultures. You know, here in America, we're given so much. You definitely see a lower side of life, and it makes you appreciate what you got, you know.
What's something that happened over there that you're really proud about?
Like I said, you know, the proudest thing for me over there is, like, the people that we did help. Like you said, helping those villagers, you know, with their wells. You know, we did a lot of medical things, too, for people. They'd come up to our FOBs quite frequently asking for medical help. And, you know, our corpsmen would come check them out and do whatever they did. So, like I said, I'm super proud. Is that, you know, yeah, just proud of doing those good things, I guess. So it's a little small things, but it means a lot.
What do you think about your service often?
Yeah, I think about it quite a bit still. Not in either a good or bad way. It just, you know, you think about it, it's such a huge part of your life. And, I mean, it made me who I am today. So, yeah, I think about it quite a bit.